morning, Judge Ferris and I are very pleased to have with us today from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, Judge Wehner. Judge Wehner?
Thank you, sir.
Welcome. Thank you for coming to help us out. We're going to call the cases off the calendar in a different order. Counsel have been so notified. We'll start with Ramon Quinones Saucedo versus John Ashcroft.
May it please the Court, my name is Jesse Lloyd for Petitioner Ramon Quinones Saucedo. Before I begin, I'd like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Keep your own time.
Thank you very much. When Mr. Quinones Saucedo was convicted in January of 1996, the fact that his conviction was attained through a trial by jury as opposed to a guilty plea had absolutely no effect on his immigration position. Notably, his immigration position at that time is his conviction did not render him deportable. It did not make him an aggravated felon. And even if he had been an aggravated felon, he could have sought relief under then Section INA 212C.
Why isn't this case controlled by our opinion in Armendariz?
Well, Your Honor, I would ask that the opinion Armendariz, Montoya versus Sanchez be limited to very narrow holdings, especially because much of the underlying authority for it has actually been subsequently overruled by Toya. Specifically, in Armendariz-Montoya versus Sanchez, the court had held that the petitioner in that case had not demonstrated a reliance on the prior law. As such, he was not afforded essentially the per se finding of reliance and by extension retroactivity in San Cyr. Our case is distinguishable in the sense that, unlike the petitioner in Montoya, Armendariz-Montoya, our client is specifically alleging reliance on the prior law. Secondarily, Armendariz-Montoya does not address whether or not it is possible to show retroactivity through avenues other than simply reasonable reliance. It simply says that in this case, unlike in San Cyr, there is no essentially per se finding of reliance and by extension retroactivity. We would ask that the court look at.
You're saying that reliance is the key?
In Armendariz-Montoya, yes. In terms of whether there is a retroactive effect on the law, no.
What's the reliance in your client's situation?
Well, and this is something that had been. Our client had chosen, in fact, had turned down a plea offer with the understanding that were he to be convicted of the crime of which he was being charged and which he ultimately was convicted, he would nonetheless be able to seek, he would not only be not deportable, but even if he was, he would be able to seek relief under INA 212C. An option which, according to the court, the government's application of the law, he's
not. In other words,
lost.
He proceeded as he did with a frame of mind that he'd be able to seek this relief?
That he would not be deportable, and if by extension, he would be able to. If
this was his conscious, knowing state of mind?
That was his attorney's. And at this point, we are also seeking.
And how do we know that?
Well, we. Twofold, Your Honor. One is we do have a letter from his prior attorney indicating as much. And secondarily, we are at this point merely seeking the opportunity, if necessary, to demonstrate that fact. As the government is applying the law, he doesn't even have the opportunity to demonstrate that. In prior pre-San Cyr cases, for example, Magana Pisano, this court has allowed petitioners to the opportunity at an evidentiary hearing to demonstrate that they had relied on the state of the law at the time. We simply would ask for that at this point, rather than the wholesale determination that there can not be a retroactive effect if somebody was convicted at jury trial as opposed to a plea.
And if given the opportunity, what would you try to demonstrate?
We would try to demonstrate that the trial attorney, excuse me, his criminal attorney, had investigated the criminal consequences of his conviction. As such, had come to the conclusion that he was not likely to be convicted of an offense or receive a sentence which would render him deportable or by extension without any deportation defenses. As such, he chose to go ahead to trial.
Why don't we hear from the other side, and we'll give you an opportunity to respond. We understand your position.
His client doesn't misunderstand the situation. Whether he conceded it or not, the fact would be there, and it made no difference. He didn't concede anything that would have hurt his client in any way.
Well, I think getting to that point, the petitioner is saying that at the time of his plea, he had some reasonable assurance that he was eligible for at the time he chose to go to trial. But as my brief points out, he was facing a potential excess of 5 years. So any belief he had that he would be eligible for Section 212C relief was unreasonable. He was facing a term of more than 5 years. He had no indication that the court would impose a term of less than 5 years. In fact, he did get a term of less than 5 years, but he had no guarantee of that. And going to trial, he rolled the dice. As this panel knows, it's bound by Armendariz-Montoya unless there has been an intervening Supreme Court decision which underlines the holding of Armendariz-Montoya. There has not been. Armendariz-Montoya was decided after Sincere. It was decided after the Hughes aircraft case relied on. Armendariz court went through the Landgraf retroactivity analysis to distinguish Sincere and arrive at the conclusion, which is adverse.
What does St. Cyr stand for?
St. Cyr stands for the proposition that it would be unfair to apply the Arriver or ATDPA to an alien who gave up a constitutional right to go to trial with a reasonable assurance, reasonable reliance on the fact that I, at some point down the line, will be eligible for Section 212. The defendant engaged in quid pro quo with the government. The government obtained the benefit of not having to expend resources, got an immediate conviction. The defendant obtained the assurance that I received a sentence of less than 5 years. Even if I committed an aggravated felony, at some point I will be eligible for Section 212. Here, the defendant cannot show that. The defendant rolled the dice, went to trial, did not give up any rights, particularly the right to trial, gambled that I won't be convicted of this offense and I won't be deportable, and he lost. Sincere could have said anybody who went to trial and was convicted of an aggravated felony prior to the effective date of the ATPA or RIRA is still eligible for Section 212. Since you didn't hold that, since you were with Harris, you said because defendants give up rights in this quid pro quo relationship that they have with the government when they enter into a plea agreement, those defendants are still entitled to Section 212.
Is that the key, giving up rights?
That is the key. That's reasonable reliance is the key component of a retroactivity analysis. There's no reason in my mind to reconsider our memories much way, even if the panel could do that, because every circuit that has considered this issue has resolved the issue against the petitioner in the exact same way that the court resolved our memories much way. And even, just getting to the petitioner's point about how the analysis, the retroactivity analysis in Hughes should be applied. Hughes is not a new case. Hughes was in existence at the time of Sincere. Sincere cited Hughes. Hughes itself recognizes that there are different formulations of the retroactivity analysis and that no one consideration is important. But defendant have reasonable assurances as to the state of the law in making the decision. And in this case, as I pointed out, Judge Ferris, at the time he proceeded to trial, he was facing a term in excess of 5 years. So he did not or should not have had a reasonable assurance that he was going to be eligible for Section 212C. If he has a need, and in his complaint, it seems like there's an allegation that his counsel as to run the criminal proceedings is ineffective. That's an entirely different claim. That's not before this court. And that's what the court should consider.
Thank you, counsel. That's very clearly and succinctly stated. It's your opportunity now to tell us why that's not right.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address the contention that he could not have reasonably relied upon the availability of 212C relief because he was potentially facing a sentence of 6 years. It's important to recognize we are seeking the opportunity to demonstrate that he could. He had an experienced attorney. We actually have made no allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel of his prior attorney. We're merely seeking the opportunity to demonstrate that in his experience, he thought that it would be possible, and beyond that, likely that he would receive a sentence for which he'd not be deportable. It's also very important to recognize that he would have faced an aggravated felony for which he could not have received 212C relief if he had served 5 years, not merely if he had been sentenced to 5 years.
That notwithstanding, what about what counsel says about St. Cyr? It really turns on having given up rights in some kind of a reliance, and here we don't have that at all.
Well, it's important to look at what St. Cyr says. First, it indicates that the elimination of 212C is not to be applied retroactively. It then goes on to state a number of factors which are crucial to a retroactivity analysis, but not all of which are necessary in an individual case. Reasonable reliance, fair notice, disturbing previously vested rights, providing new legal impairments to prior conduct, and, of course, reasonable reliance on the state of the law at the time. It then takes reasonable reliance, finds that that was true in Sincere's case and presumably in the case of anyone else who would have pled at that point, and then says, well, they have reasonable reliance. By extension, they would have suffered a retroactive effect of the law, which is per se impermissible under the proper reading of the statute. It does not say that reasonable reliance is the only mechanism with which to find a retroactive effect of the law.
I hear the other side saying there, under no circumstances could we regard this reliance as reasonable based on the jaws of the trial that were awaiting your client.
Well, Your Honor, to go back to what we were saying before, even if he had been sentenced to 6 years, under the sentencing guidelines, he could have served four or less, and as indicated in our brief. And it's important to recognize
could have, would have, should have. That doesn't make it reasonable, does it? You're rolling the dice at best.
Well, it would have been. We're merely seeking the opportunity to explain that it would be reasonable, Your Honor. He had an experienced criminal attorney who, in his opinion, and it's important to recognize, he was, in fact, sentenced to 3 years. There's definitely some validity to his underlying belief that he would be able to get our client less than have him serve less than 5 years. And at this point, again, we're merely seeking the opportunity to present that to the district court.
Have anything else? We understand your case.
Just one brief addition, Your Honor. The government has said that there's no legal consequence to deciding to go to trial over taking a plea. It's important to recognize that Sincere is ultimately a case of statutory construction, which mandates the properly read, the statutes eliminating 212C do not apply to those who pled guilty to offenses for which they would qualify prior to the elimination of that relief. Under the government's interpretation, that statute by necessity would mandate a distinction between going to trial and taking a plea. That, of course, as our client, who actually has been removed, his case demonstrates, there's a tremendous legal consequence to that decision, which was imposed subsequent to his decision to go to trial.
Thank you, counsel. The case just argued is ordered submitted. We appreciate your help. We will get you a decision as soon as we can. And we'll call the next case, which is United States versus Sproul.